And I'll speak on the review of the proposed my government system and from the point of view of the teaching of Canada and from the point of view of their further elucidation by the Beaumont College of Paper and Monster. Can you hear me in the rear?
No.
I'm starting to get a cold, so I won't try to shout early in the evening. I don't think I lost very long. So the truth is, Buddha said that he who does not know the two truths does not know the essence of the doctrine that's repeated by Nara and Buddha. Louder again?
Highest object truth, the truth as an object for the highest or ultimate consciousness. Nothing else is. Too many different names for emptiness. Reality, all phenomena, etc. Just quickly on the other two etymologies, a truth for the highest object, that means the highest consciousness. Object here is just means consciousness. Consciousnesses are objects, but so it's a truth for the highest consciousness. So it's hardly different. The third one is quite different. It's a truth which is an object and which is highest. Right? Emptiness is an object, something realized in wisdom consciousness, and it is highest. So let's give you the first one. Truth is an object of highest consciousness. So the word truth is very important. In meditative equipoise, emptiness exists the way it appears. Whereas for Sambuddhi Satya, which we usually translate as conventional truths, but it's probably a very weak translation, none of those objects exist the way they appear. They're called truths, however. They're called truths because they're truths for Sambuddhi. Sambuddhi here means the obscure earth, that which obscures. Ignorance. Chandrakirti said, he said that, although actually, he was talking as a sort of the ebook to the translator of his text, and he spoke so quickly, and the translator didn't understand what he could. Because he said, and thus it didn't come out quite right in every respect. Anyway, this is Chandrakirti and Rainbow Bio. Anyway. These objects, all other objects except emptinesses, are truths for an ignorant consciousness. As Chandrakirti said, because ignorance obscures the nature, the actual nature of things, it is called samvritti. Thus, Sambuddhi, according to Chandrakirti's own etymology in this particular spot in his supplement to Nagarjuna's treatise on the Middle Way, according to that etymology, it means ignorance, the obscurer, the concealer. You can see why we don't want to translate it that way. So it's a truth for a concealer. In other words, only an ignorant consciousness would take, like, that world to exist the way it appears. Well, it's a truth for a concealer in that it's something that exists the way it appears only for an ignorant consciousness. So Buddha's term is extremely powerful, Sambuddhi Satya, unlike conventional truth. Truth for a concealer, truth for an ignorant consciousness. Thus, each one of these things in our sight now, unless emptiness is in your sight, is a truth for a concealing consciousness. It's only an idiot and only a jerk or concealer that will take it to be a truth. Right? That would take it to exist the way it appears. So we could say truth for a jerk. So where's the jerk? You know, Buddha's words, you know, have great strength to them. Anyone can do it. Really, Buddha. Then you have to, you know, when you think truth for a jerk, that's a truth for a jerk. going to exist the way they appear, I don't know. But certainly we live locked into that basic ignorance that assumes that these things exist the way they appear. So it's not just some sort of conceptual consciousness that thinks wall, fan, picture, lights that don't work, ceiling, glass, you know, hair, eyes, flesh. It's not the conceptual consciousness that thinks that. That's the jerk, all right? There's a conceptual consciousness that merely assumes that these things exist the way they appear, no matter whether you name them or not. It's not a question of whether you name them or not. The jerk is still there, whether you name them or not. So Samvritti Satya. He has three etymologies for Samvritti Satya also. He takes Samvritti also as meaning relative. Mutually dependent. Now that means that all of these phenomena are mutually dependent with some phenomena. That's not, doesn't mean that everything is mutually dependent with everything else, but that there's some dependence with something else. Cause depending on effect, and in this system, effect also depending upon cause. The chunk of seeing matter there, depending upon its parts. But emptiness also is mutually dependent. It depends upon the consciousness that designates it also. So even if Samvritti means relative or mutually dependent, that's wider than Samvritti Satya. And the other meaning is conventional. But the meaning that Chandrakirti emphasizes, and that is emphasized in the tradition that I've been studying, to the point where you just plain have to translate it that way, and otherwise you miss the impact of it completely, is truth for a concealing consciousness, truth for a concealer. What would be some easy way to think about it? You see, the terminology, when we first hear about it, according to this very same system, none of it is my own thought, is first on the level of just by sound. But, you know, words like house for us have some meanings. Words like Samvritti Satya, I don't know, some of us do, some of us that don't. Sometimes Samvritti Satya just means Samvritti Satya. What does it mean? Some people say, I'd rather have the Sanskrit because it sounds better. But then, as you think about it and get used to the meaning, some meaning begins appearing. So there are two levels to the conceptual consciousness that pays attention to any term. One is just where there's the reverberation of the sound. And it's like how people often talk at the university. Of course, that's an extremely beginning level. The next level is where some meaning actually appears, but you're not contacting the meaning directly. I think we tend to think of this as intuition. Within this system, it's still just conceptual understanding, but it's reached a bit deeper level. So if we're going to lift terminology like Paramartha Satya, Samvritti Satya, out of the near level of these sounds, you know, openness, truth, conventional truth, to begin realizing that every single one of these things in our sight here is a conventional truth, is a truth for a concealer, is a truth for ignorance, or is a truth for a jerk, whatever way. But there has to be some convenient term so that one can, and I think a great deal of yoga has to do with patience. Be willing to sit and do this seemingly absurd thing of thinking, oh, that's a truth for a jerk. I just assume you're a jerk myself. But if I had some better word, truth for a conceiver is too hard to say, isn't it? Truth for ignorance? Okay. Truth for ignorance. But then you don't quite feel the ignorance is right here. Truth for a jerk. And you know, sit and take everything that appears to your mind one by one and think, this is a truth for a jerk. This is a truth for a jerk. You know, I'm up to my ear. My ear is a truth for a jerk. This tooth is a truth for a jerk. This tooth, you know, it gets boring, you think. That's why I say patience. It's not boring, but it may seem like this is a truth. This one is the truth for a jerk. This one is the truth. The inside of this one is the truth. This one's the truth. I get sick of doing it with my teeth. My tongue is the truth for a jerk. That door, and I say I'm trying to get away. That door is the truth for a jerk. Now pretty soon I'm going to think of something that's going to attract me entirely. That meal that I'm going to eat when I go home, that's the truth for a jerk. Right? But what could distract me entirely and keep me from remembering that my present meditation is to think on everything that comes to my mind as a truth for a jerk? Giovanni, that'll be the next thing I think of. And I'll drop the meditation. Tomorrow I'll say, that meditation was nothing. You know, it didn't help me. You know, I still see things the way I used to. Didn't have any power. So patience, right? Going through every thread in the row. This is a truth for a jerk. That's a truth for a jerk. This is a truth for a jerk. That's a truth for a jerk. And I think you'd have to retain the sense that this is what Samvritti Satya. You know, you start separating out Samvritti Satya and truth for a jerk after a while. Whereas actually, truth for a jerk is just Samvritti Satya translated into English. Understand that? Well, we can separate out the two. And we have this glorified thing of the Buddhist religion that talks about Paramartha Satya. Samvritti Satya. I used to think, maybe it's up in the sky. And I look in my mind and there's sort of a cloud there. I said, could that be Samvritti Satya? You know, people are translated into English in the singular. Conventional truth, you know? Like truth, beauty, love, and so forth. But only be the singular. You know, it's something, it certainly wouldn't be this object and that object, and this object and that object. It would be some vague thing. Amorphous. Preferably amorphous. So this is all truth. So there are many truth for a jerk. It's a switch. So there are many. As many, what? Not as many as there are objects of knowledge, because emptinesses are objects of knowledge and are not truths for a jerk. But even emptinesses would have related with them phenomena that are truths for a jerk. Now what that is challenging is, I mean, and what it's, the message that comes through if one does this terminological yoga is that these things don't exist the way they appear, and that it's only a fool who would take them to exist the way they appear. And so when Buddha named emptiness, the truth, which is an object for the highest consciousness, That's quite the opposite of truth for a jerk. There's some call right in the terminology itself to the practice of the path, a preference for understanding the nature of objects rather than just being carried away by the superficial phenomena. But now, what about truths for a jerk? Do they exist? Because they are a division of the two truths, and the two truths are a division of objects of knowledge, they must exist. So that means that whatever is a truth for a jerk isn't necessarily a, you said, truth for a jerk. Do you follow me? That Samvritti Satya means, when you say, if you break it down, just the term, it means jerk truth, all that? That's pretty good. That works. I mean, jerk truth. And that, if you lay that out, that means truth for a jerk. But whatever is a truth for a jerk is not necessarily a jerk truth. Why? Because jerks, ignorant consciousnesses, believe in a whole lot of things that don't exist at all. Well, there's a difference. These things do exist. They do exist. They may be tools for an ignorant consciousness. An ignorant consciousness may misbelieve that they exist the way they appear, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. You follow? They exist. And they have to exist to be a division within the two truths. To be included within the two truths, that thing must exist. So something that a jerk considers to exist that really doesn't exist is not a jerk truth. Right? It's just, you know, it's accepted that the etymology of the term, even the force of the term, is wider than the actual meaning of the term. Because some people don't like to translate it that way, but that's where the emphasis of the tradition is nevertheless. Well, none of this is my fault. None of it. So there are a lot of things that ignorant consciousnesses believe in that just plain don't exist at all. Right? From the Buddhist point of view, what do you say? The maker of the substance of our pleasure and pain, the thing that brings about our pleasure and pain is our own former action. So a creator deity within this context is something that only an ignorant consciousness believes in, but it's not a jerk truth because it doesn't exist. So Buddha said in the meeting of the Father and Son Sutra, is after Buddha's enlightenment, he went to see his father, who I hear, was told many times, was too overjoyed at his son's success and could not make much progress on the basis of what his son told him. Too happy about his voice. Buddha said, objects of knowledge are exhausted in the two truths. That which is to be known, objects of knowledge, that which is to be known are exhausted in the two truths. Now the word objects of knowledge or that which is to be known is synonymous with existence. A Buddha could have said existence, that's T-E-N-T-S. Existence are exhausted in the two truths. He didn't. He chose the word, that which is to be known is exhausted in the two truths. And by his very choice of the word, that which is to be known, he indicated that it's the prime thing to be known is the two truths. In other words, those things which are to be known are exhausted within the two truths. This is according to Quintana. Quintana. So now what's included among jerk truth? There are really some fantastic things included among jerk truth. Not just like house, body, you know, hair, teeth, mind, the existence of emptiness. All right? The existence of emptiness is a jerk truth. A truth for a concealing consciousness. It would be taken to exist the way it appears only by an ignorant consciousness. The 10 bodhisattva bhumis, I translate the term not as stages but as grounds, because I don't like to use new terms if there are old terms, but I use stage for vimba, kama, and so I figure I got to add another word for bhumi. And conveniently, a great deal of emphasis is put on the fact that this highest consciousness serves as the basis for the generation of good qualities, just as the earth, the ground, serves as the basis for all that grows. So, Chandrakirti puts great emphasis on the fact that these bhumis are like the earth, they're like ground. So anyway, I call them 10 grounds. The 10 grounds are consciousnesses. Consciousnesses are not emptinesses. Therefore, they are jerk truths. So, jerk truth, it's sort of like once you open the door, beginning to get lost. You know, jerk truth sounds good for a while. Only an ignorant consciousness would take it to exist the way it appears. Only an ignorant consciousness would assume that there's no conflict between the way it appears and the way it is. Right? That sounds good. But then you begin thinking, well, these are things that are only existent for jerks. Okay? Obviously, the existence of emptiness doesn't even exist for jerks. The 10 bodhisattva grounds aren't things that just exist for ignorant consciousnesses. Okay? So truth doesn't mean exist. Truth means a correspondence between the way it appears and the way it actually is. Okay? Two, that consciousness which is the primary certifying consciousness of that object. Okay, primary certifying consciousness. That wall, what is the primary certifying consciousness of that wall? As far as I'm concerned, it's my I consciousness. Okay? The primary certifying consciousness of the heat of this candle is my body consciousness. Alright? What is the primary certifying consciousness of emptiness? It's that highest consciousness of meditative equipoise. Deep meditative equipoise on emptiness. It is what certifies emptiness. Okay? What is the primary certifying consciousness of the existence of emptiness? It's not that deep consciousness of meditative equipoise. It's a lower level type consciousness, a conceptual, inferential consciousness. And to that consciousness, emptiness, the existence of emptiness appears one way. Even the existence of emptiness appears to inherently exist. Therefore, anybody doesn't? Therefore, it's false. It would be a truth only for a jerk. You follow me? Now, there is a conceptual consciousness that realizes emptiness. Not this deep consciousness of meditative equipoise that realizes emptiness directly, like water put into water. Emptiness like one glass of water, and the consciousness that realizes it like another glass of water, and these two pour together in one bowl. You couldn't say, this is the water from that glass, that's the water from that glass. So from the point of view of the person who's experiencing it, there's no duality whatsoever. There's no appearance of inherent existence. There's no sense of subject and object. And there are no conventional phenomena appearing at all. So it's totally non-dualistic. But for this inferential consciousness, you know, one first understands emptiness by searching to try to find objects, searching through analysis to try to find objects. The first understanding of emptiness is conceptual, is inferential. And that consciousness can incontrovertibly understand emptiness. But emptiness still appears to inherently exist. Even though emptiness is the absence of inherent existence, the absence of inherent existence appears to inherently exist. But that inferential consciousness is not the primary certifying consciousness of emptiness. The consciousness of deep meditative equipoise is. Therefore, emptiness is a truth. It's not that it appears that it's a truth for every consciousness, is it? That there is no discordance between the way it appears and the way it exists for every consciousness. But for that one that's seeing it directly in deep meditative equipoise, there is no discordance between the way it exists and the way it is. Now these phenomena around us, these phenomena inside us, those included in the continuum, those not included in the continuum, appear to these sense consciousnesses even to be very solid, to exist in and of themselves. To exist in their own life. You know, what do you mean they don't exist in their own right? This one is said once in Dharamsala. You know, do they appear, and this was to a lecture on the six pieces of Narayana. Said, how could it be that phenomena would appear to be merely designated? You know, who would try to claim that phenomena do not appear to exist in their own right? You know, it's obvious that phenomena appear to exist in their own right. But they appear to exist in their own right, whereas they do not exist in their own right. They appear to exist by way of their own being, but they don't exist by way of their own being. They appear to exist inherently, but they don't exist inherently by way of their own nature. They appear to exist right with those parts that are their basis of designation. Right? Right with that. But do not. So, all of our consciousnesses have a mistaken element in them, in that these phenomena, all of them, appear one way and exist another way. But does that mean that none of our consciousnesses are right in any respect? Doesn't mean that. They're all wrong, all of these sense consciousnesses, without any conceptual reality. They're wrong. They're wrong with respect to the mode of existence of that object. But with respect to, I hope it's a green wall. Green wall or not, my eye consciousness is correct. Follow? Correct with respect to green wall, brown door, etc. But not with respect to the mode of existence of those objects. Thus the same consciousness can be valid one way and invalid, really, another way. Because sometimes the scriptures stress that they're invalid with respect to the mode of being of objects, people feel, well, they're invalid for thinking. Or in other places where scriptures say they're valid with respect to this main object, that means just green wall, then they're valid in all respects. Now certainly we live our lives as if they're valid in all respects. And when you reflect on some guilty subject, jerk truth or truth for a jerk, you begin to realize that they're not, you know, that these consciousnesses are not valid with respect to the mode of existence of those objects. So, are the two truths two levels of truth? No, because in this case, you see, truth is, to say it again, being laid out, is that much accordance in the way it appears